Section 6, General Management. Lesson 3. Let's dive into the powers of associations, particularly focusing on condominiums and homeowners associations. In the world of condominiums, associations have some interesting powers when it comes to enhancing the living experience for unit owners. They can enter into agreements to acquire leaseholds, memberships, and other types of possessory, or use interests in various lands or facilities. This could include anything from country clubs and golf courses to marinas and other recreational spots. What's important to note is that these facilities don't necessarily have to be right next door to the condominium. They just need to be intended for the enjoyment and benefit of the unit owners. Now, if there are any leaseholds or memberships that exist or are created at the time the declaration is recorded, they must be clearly stated and described in that declaration. This transparency is crucial. Additionally, before the association can make any moves to acquire these interests, they need to get a vote or written consent from a majority of the total voting interests, or they must follow what's outlined in the declaration itself. The declaration can also specify that costs related to rentals, membership fees, operations, and other expenses are considered common expenses. It can even impose certain covenants and restrictions on how these facilities can be used, as long as they don't conflict with existing statutes. And here's a fun fact. Condominium associations are even allowed to conduct bingo games, as outlined in a specific statute. Now, shifting gears to homeowners associations, there's a similar framework in place. After a year from the date the declaration is recorded, if the declaration allows for significant alterations or additions to the common areas or association property, the association has the green light to enter into agreements to acquire leaseholds, memberships, and other possessory, or use interests in various lands or facilities. This could include country clubs, golf courses, marinas, submerged land, parking areas, conservation areas, and other recreational facilities. However, there's a catch. These agreements require the approval of a certain percentage of members, as defined in the declaration. If the declaration doesn't specify what that percentage is, then the association needs to secure approval from 75% of the total voting interest to move forward with any such transaction. This ensures that the voices of the members are heard and that any significant changes reflect the collective will of the community. So, whether it's a condominium or a homeowners association, the powers granted to these associations are designed to enhance the community experience while ensuring that members have a say in the decisions that affect their shared spaces and amenities. Let's dive into the world of alternative dispute resolution, starting with arbitration. Arbitration serves as a viable alternative to traditional court proceedings. In this process, a neutral third party known as an arbitrator steps in to evaluate the facts and arguments presented by both sides involved in the dispute. The arbitrator listens carefully and ultimately makes a decision based on the information provided. Now, if there are contested issues that need clarification, an arbitration hearing may take place. During this hearing, each party has the chance to present their case, which includes bringing in witnesses and submitting various exhibits to support their arguments. However, if there are no significant disputes regarding the facts, the arbitrator typically makes a ruling based solely on the written submissions, such as the petition for arbitration and the response, along with the relevant laws. It's also worth noting that parties involved in arbitration have the option to be represented by an attorney, to represent themselves, or to have a qualified representative assist them. Now, let's shift gears and talk about mediation. Mediation is a process where a neutral third party called a mediator plays a crucial role in helping two or more parties reach a voluntary settlement of their dispute. Unlike arbitration, mediation is informal and non-adversarial, focusing on collaboration rather than conflict. The primary goal here is to assist the disputing parties in finding a mutually acceptable agreement. In mediation, the power to make decisions rests entirely with the parties involved. The mediator's role is to facilitate the process by helping identify the key issues, encouraging joint problem solving, and exploring various settlement options. When it comes to condominium and cooperative associations, there are specific rules regarding non-binding arbitration and mediation of disputes. Before anyone can take their issues to court, parties involved in a dispute, excluding those related to elections or recalls, must either petition the division for non-binding arbitration or initiate pre-suit mediation, as outlined in the statute. If all parties agree to be bound by the arbitration, then it becomes binding. To start this process, a petition must be filed along with a $50 fee. The types of disputes that can be addressed include disagreements over elections, notices of meetings, the proper conduct of meetings, and the right of the board to require actions from unit owners regarding their units or the common elements. However, it's important to note that disputes concerning the title to a condominium unit or cooperative share, warranties, fees, or assessments are not included in this arbitration process. The arbitration is managed by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, DBPR, and the arbitrators are required to be members of the Florida Bar. If a party prevails in arbitration, they are entitled to recover attorney's fees, and a unit owner or shareholder who wins can also reclaim their share of any assessment levied to cover the cost of the proceedings. Additionally, all parties have the right to representation during the arbitration. Moving on to homeowners associations, there are specific requirements for binding arbitration or court action, as well as pre-suit mediation for certain disputes. For instance, disputes related to elections and recalls must undergo mandatory binding arbitration, which is conducted by the DBPR, or the parties can choose to file in a court of competent jurisdiction. Other types of disputes, however, must first go through pre-suit mediation before any court action can be initiated. These disputes can include issues regarding the use of property, changes to common areas, amendments to association documents, board and committee meetings, and access to official records of the association. Mediation in this context is handled by private mediators who are certified as circuit court civil mediators or arbitrators, following the standards set by the Florida Supreme Court. Typically, unless the parties agree otherwise, the costs of mediation are shared between them. If mediation doesn't resolve all the issues, the parties have the option to either file the unresolved dispute in court or choose to enter into binding or non-binding arbitration. So, both arbitration and mediation offer alternative pathways for resolving disputes outside of the courtroom, each with its own processes and rules tailored to different types of conflicts. Let's dive into the sale and rental regulations that govern properties, particularly focusing on how they impact prospective buyers and tenants. First off, it's important to note that the governing documents of a property can empower the board to approve potential purchasers or tenants before any transfer of ownership takes place. This means that if you're looking to buy or rent, the board has a say in whether you're a good fit for the community. Now, when it comes to restrictions on property use, there are a couple of key points to keep in mind. Any restrictions that are put in place must serve a lawful purpose and be clearly outlined in the governing documents. This ensures that everyone is on the same page and understands the rules that apply. For those living in condominium and cooperative associations, there are specific fees that may be charged. If the condominium documents allow it, the association can impose a transfer fee, but it can't exceed $150. On the other hand, if you're part of a cooperative, the maximum transfer fee is capped at $100. Additionally, if the community documents permit it, the association can also require a rental security deposit, which can be up to 1 month's rent. When it comes to renting in condominiums, there are some important nuances to consider. If an amendment is made that prohibits unit owners from renting their units or changes the rental terms, this only affects those unit owners who agree to the amendment and those who buy their units after the amendment takes effect. So, if you're a current owner, you might not be impacted unless you consent to those changes. Now, let's talk about homeowners associations. Any governing document or amendment that comes into play after July 1, 2021, which regulates or prohibits rental agreements, will only apply to those parcel owners who agree to the new rules or to those who purchase their property after the amendment is enacted. This means that existing owners who don't consent won't be bound by these new regulations. Moreover, associations have the authority to amend their documents to restrict rental agreements for terms shorter than 6 months. They can also limit the number of times a parcel can be rented out to 3 times within a calendar year. However, it's worth noting that these amendments apply to all parcel owners, but they do not affect associations that have 15 or fewer parcels. Lastly, it's essential to understand what happens when a unit or parcel is rented. When a tenant moves in, they gain all the use rights that the owner has. However, the owner can only access the common elements of the property as a guest, which means their rights are somewhat limited while the tenant is in residence. So, whether you're looking to buy, rent, or simply understand the rules of your community, it's crucial to familiarize yourself with these regulations. They're designed to maintain order and ensure that everyone enjoys their living space to the fullest. Let's talk about the role of a registered agent and the importance of filing an annual corporate report, especially if you're running a corporation in Florida. First off, a registered agent is essentially a designated individual or entity that acts as a point of contact for your corporation. This person is required by law to receive important legal documents, such as lawsuits or official notices. Think of them as your corporation's official messenger, ensuring that you stay informed about any legal matters that may arise. Now, according to corporate statutes, every corporation must maintain a physical office. This isn't just a formality, it's a legal requirement, and when we say physical office, we mean a real street address. Unfortunately, a post office box won't cut it. Your registered address needs to be a legitimate location where you can be reached. If you ever need to change your registered agent or the physical address of your corporation, there's a specific process to follow. You can't just make changes on a whim. Instead, you must provide written notice to the Department of State to officially update this information. Now, let's dive into the annual corporate report, which is a crucial task for all corporations in Florida. Each year, you're required to file this report along with the appropriate fee. The filing window is between January 1 and May 1, so mark your calendars. This report is not just a formality, it contains essential information about your corporation. You'll need to include the name of your corporation, the date it was incorporated, or if it's a foreign corporation, the date it was allowed to operate in Florida. Additionally, you'll need to provide the address of your principal office and your mailing address. If your corporation has a federal employer identification number, you'll need to include that too. If you haven't applied for one, just indicate that in the report. Don't forget to list the names and business addresses of your directors and principal officers, as well as the street address of your registered office and the name of your registered agent. It's important to note that this annual report must be signed by an officer or director of the corporation. If your corporation is under the control of a receiver or trustee, they can sign on behalf of the corporation. The signature on this report carries the same weight as if it were made under oath, so it's crucial to ensure that all the information is accurate and up to date as of the date you sign. Lastly, be aware that if you fail to file your annual report in compliance with the law, your corporation could face serious consequences. You won't be able to maintain or defend any legal actions in Florida until you file the report and pay any outstanding fees or taxes. In fact, your corporation could even be at risk of dissolution or losing its authority to operate in the state. So, it's really in your best interest to stay on top of these requirements. Here are 10 multiple-choice questions based on the information in Session 6 to Lesson 3. 1. What is one power that condominium associations have regarding recreational facilities? A. They can only acquire facilities located next to the condominium. B. They can enter into agreements to acquire leaseholds and memberships for the benefit of unit owners. C. They cannot acquire any facilities outside the condominium. D. They must acquire facilities through a court order. The correct answer is B. One power that condominium associations have regarding recreational facilities is that they can enter into agreements to acquire leaseholds and memberships for the benefit of unit owners. 2. Before a condominium association can acquire leaseholds or memberships, what is required? A. A vote or written consent from a majority of the total voting interests. B. Approval from the local government. C. A unanimous decision from all unit owners. D. No approval is needed if the facilities are beneficial. The correct answer is A. Before a condominium association can acquire leaseholds or memberships, a vote or written consent from a majority of the total voting interests. 3. In homeowners associations, what percentage of member approval is typically required to acquire leaseholds if not specified in the declaration? A. 50%. B. 60%. C. 75%. D. 100%. The correct answer is C. In homeowners associations, 75% of member approval is typically required to acquire leaseholds if not specified in the declaration. 4. What is the primary role of an arbitrator in the arbitration process? A. To represent one party in the dispute. B. To mediate between the parties without making a decision. C. To evaluate facts and arguments and make a decision. D. To ensure both parties agree on the outcome. The correct answer is C. The primary role of an arbitrator in the arbitration process is to evaluate facts and arguments and make a decision. 5. In mediation, who has the power to make decisions? A. The parties involved in the dispute. B. The mediator. C. A judge. D. An attorney representing one of the parties. The correct answer is A. In mediation, the parties involved in the dispute have the power to make decisions. 6. What is the maximum transfer fee that a condominium association can impose according to the governing documents? A. $50. B. $150. C. $100. D. $200. The correct answer is B. The maximum transfer fee that a condominium association can impose according to the governing documents is $150. 7. If a homeowners association amends its governing documents to restrict rentals, who does this amendment apply to? A. All current owners. B. Only owners who consent to the amendment. C. Owners who agree to the new rules or those who purchase after the amendment. D. All future owners, regardless of consent. The correct answer is C. If a homeowners association amends its governing documents to restrict rentals, this amendment applies to owners who agree to the new rules or those who purchase after the amendment. 8. What is the purpose of a registered agent for a corporation? A. To manage the corporation's finances. B. To act as a point of contact for legal documents. C. To represent the corporation in court. D. To oversee employee relations. The correct answer is B. The purpose of a registered agent for a corporation is to act as a point of contact for legal documents. 9. What must be included in the annual corporate report filed by a corporation in Florida? A. Only the name of the corporation. B. Only the address of the principal office. C. A list of all employees. D. The name of the corporation, date of incorporation, and addresses of directors. The correct answer is D. The name of the corporation, date of incorporation, and addresses of directors must be included in the annual corporate report filed by a corporation in Florida. 10. What could happen if a corporation fails to file its annual report in Florida? A. It will receive a warning letter. B. It could face dissolution or lose its authority to operate. C. It will be fined but allowed to continue operating. D. It will be required to file additional reports. The correct answer is B. If a corporation fails to file its annual report in Florida, it could face dissolution or it could lose its authority to operate. How do you feel about your performance on the quiz for Section 6, Lesson 3? If you're unsure about your answers or wish to enhance your understanding, reviewing the material is a smart choice. You can also find the relevant content in your student manual, specifically on pages 190-196.